Both of them were butterflies.
Thank you, Mr. Representative McNamara. We now have a quorum. We have the minutes. I think Representative Adkins has got a history here of studying the minutes thoroughly.
I have, and I move those minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the motion is before us to approve the minutes of April the 18th. Any discussion? I don't know if my birthday is reflected on here.
Oh.
Remember, we had a birthday celebration.
Perhaps you should move the minutes.
Let's see, the name Huntley is spelled
correct. Okay. Yeah. Any further discussion on the minutes? All those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We have two bills today, the omnibus tax bill and the omnibus transportation bill, and we'll be taking the tax bill up first. And Representative Lincheski, I think if it's all right with you, we'll have you explain the bill, but you do have a technical amendment that I think your name is on. Did you want to do that first or wait until you've explained the bill? It's your choice.
Either way, Mr. Chair, I guess I'll just try to make sure I have the right amendment. I'll move
24. It's mine. Told it's a technical housekeeping.
Right.
It's different than that.
Do you have the a quorum so I can move the bill?
Yes.
Okay.
We have a quorum.
So I'll move House File 677 to pass and be sent to the floor.
Okay. The motion is before us, and then if you want to take up the amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you. I'd like to move the 8067784 amendment. And, Mr. Chair, if I may, I'll just describe it. Line 1.2 clarifies the governor's unitary sales provision does not apply to sales made by foreign corporation subsidiaries. Line 1.3 reinserts a city that was overlooked in the Rochester sales tax sharing. Lines 1.4 through 1.9 modifies the makeup of the DMC, the Destination Medical Center Corporation, by reducing a non-Mayo business rep from 2-1 and adding a labor representative from 3 nominated by the Southeast Minnesota Area Labor Council. Lines 110 through 113 limit the Olmsted County authority to impose the wheelage tax to fund DMC so that until January 1st of 18, the combined wheelage tax under this and general law must be equal to the rate in general law. That's a streamlined sales issue for us in the state. This is because until the date that the motor vehicle registration computer system can't handle different tax rates in different counties. And lines 1.14 and 1.15 limit the Olmsted County match for the DMC transit aid in any year to the lesser of either 40% of the state transit aid for DMC or the amount raised by a county sales tax of 0.15%. So what this means, members, of the 116 transit portion in the DMC project that's contained in the tax bill, the county will pay a maximum of $33 million, and the state will pay $83 million. So that's the A24.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Okay, hearing none then, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. There are a couple of other amendments, Representative Lincheski, but I think we'll wait on those until you've explained the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. There is a lot to explain about the bill. Since this is the Ways and Means Committee, I won't go through a lot of detail on the 330-some pages you have before you. Just some highlights, because I know this committee always has a lot of questions. So this is the bill that repays the school shift in its entirety, removes the deficit, the permanent structural deficit from the Minnesota budget, and then funds the initiatives of the Minnesota legislature for this year. So the big chunks, I think the way to think about the revenue in the bill is four big pieces and then some other pieces around them. It's closing corporate loopholes, asking those who are the wealthiest in Minnesota to pay more, both in a permanent way at a new fourth tier and in a temporary way to pay back the school shift. We're going to ask folks who use alcohol and cigarettes to pay a higher tax, or as a representative over would like me to say, to tell them. I'll tell you, on the alcohol and cigarette tax, those are discretionary, optional purchases, so no one's being told to use them. But if you do use alcohol and cigarettes, we're going to have folks pay a higher percentage of the cost they're costing the state government than is in current law. Additionally, this is the bill that also carries significant property tax reform for the state of Minnesota, and we are increasing the renter's credit, the homeowner credit refund, the circuit breaker, PTR, people call it different things around here. We're going to add some local government aid funding and some county aid funding. On the individual level, about a million Minnesotans will receive an increased property tax refund or an increased renter's credit. There are a number of other things going on in the bill. We have a new veterans credit for employers who hire veterans. We're giving assistance to all the police and fire folks across the state of Minnesota. That was an Atkins bill. We're doing significant federal conformity. Finally, removing the marriage penalty and dealing with the married standard deduction issue that year after year we can't seem to find the money around here to do that. So that's going to be a tax cut to all married Minnesotans who earn under $400,000 a year. Those over that will get it as well, but they'll also have a fourth tier applied to them. That's paid for through a revenue neutral. In fact, now it's a slightly moderate overall tax cut in the income tax system. So through federal conformity, we're going to remove all kinds of issues that have made our tax system significantly too complicated for our filers and provide them again with this tax cut within the income tax system. We're also doing some business tax cuts in the form of removing some gimmicks that have affected the business community. Section 179 expensing, we're taking care of that in this bill, and we're permanently getting rid of the process whereby our employers, when they buy equipment, they have to estimate the tax on that, pay the tax, save their receipts, send them to the state, and then they get a refund. It's called the upfront capital equipment exemption, and we're removing that in law. We're doing a number of large projects across the state and lots of ones not as large throughout the state. There's provisions in here for the Mall of America, the Mayo Clinic, 3M. We're also going to do affiliate nexus to give our bricks and mortars companies in Minnesota that are employing people here and own property here a tax advantage through a process or through a proposal called affiliate nexus is how most people hear about that one. Just trying to think off the top of my head. We're doing an expansion of the public safety radio system through a sales tax exemption. I said we're eliminating the marriage penalty. And beyond that, there's a lot of members' bills in here. It's very bipartisan in not maybe in how people feel about the overall magnitude of the bill, but in individual members' bills within the bill. So we're also doing an occupation tax in the taconite area, and we are introducing Representative Hansen's bill, which is a sand silica tax. I probably missed some things, but that's kind of the highlights, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, any discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lunchesky, in your opening remarks, you stated that this bill would remove the permanent structural deficit permanently. I believe in the last forecast, the out biennium was actually in the black. So I'm not sure. I think we have the upcoming biennium of $626 million, but my recollection is in the out years we went back into the black.
Representative Lunchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that I agree with you. We're doing it faster. We're paying back a lot of the gimmicks in the budget faster than the forecast would permit. So there is, by paying back the school shift more earlier than the tails, we're doing it immediately. We're also addressing the $627 million deficit at this point. So the last forecast, of course, shows both the school shift to be paid back. It also shows the deficit. And again, some of the other shifts and gimmicks that have been in the state budget for many years is Section 179 expensing, the capital equipment refund, and failing to conform for married joint filers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lunchesky, on the gimmick approach for the school shift,
We've heard testimony from the administration that they didn't believe the school shift was a gimmick. They thought it was a tool in the toolbox. Are you suggesting that the school shift is a gimmick in the budgeting process, or is it a tool in the toolbox?
Representative Chesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, it's both, and I will tell you, like you, Representative Woodard, I voted for it. And I actually, unlike a lot of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, I think it's an appropriate use to use things that we have when we need to. And the reason we should repay it as quickly as we can is if we were ever facing a massive deficit again, someone might want to use it. This is a commitment that if you have to go in and do this, and you're right, Democrats did it in the past, and Republicans both affirmed that level and added a significantly higher level to it. People use this as a political football round here in both parties, but both parties have done it repeatedly. But usually the commitment is to pay it back very quickly, and I think everybody wants to pay it back, including you, Representative Woodard, and the governor, and I do. But this bill says we're going to pay it back as quickly as we can, and we're honoring that commitment to pay back our schools before we start new spending initiatives.
Representative
Woodard. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up. I certainly agree with you that we should be paying back the shift. I disagree with the way we're doing it in this bill, and I hope that the governor will change his mind and think that paying back the shift is a priority as well. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Madam Tax Chair. I noticed there are a couple things in here that we're looking for that incentivize some new business developments in our area. I want to say thank you for including those in your tax bill. There is one, though, that concerns me, and that has to do with the new taxes and fees levied on the sand mining company, sand and aggregates, around page 187, 188, 189. Although I don't represent Le Sueur County, I know there are two existing mines in that area that have been in operation for over 50 years, and a couple new mines proposed in Scott County. One of them actually started operation within the last month, and another one will be up and running within a year, I hope. But they're telling me that these fees will probably be not only a deal breaker, but a door closer. Is there any way, or was there testimony taken? I'm sorry I'm not on your committee. Testimony taken about the effect of these taxes on the ability of these people to do aggregate and sand mining for any purpose, let alone oil and gas purposes.
Representative Beard, I can't see you, but yes, there was, and I will defer to Representative Dabney as well. There was significant testimony taken in both Representative Dabney's division and in the full committee. Representative Hansen, this is his bill. I was kind of looking for him in the room. Mm-hmm. It was so interesting to watch this bill get debated in the legislature or in the tax committees, because every person who came to testify with concerns on it would then take a lot of time to thank Representative Hansen for how hard he had been working with them, and he made numerous changes to his initial proposal repeatedly in response to the industry, and I wish he were here to get into that a little bit more with you. But I think that portion of the bill has been very strategically and methodically worked through to avoid just what you said. Mm-hmm. And we understand that there are folks running that business here now, mm-hmm. and a lot of good actors doing things the way we would want them to. There's a lot of things going on as it relates to if you use the roads versus the rail.
Sure.
Do you wash your sand? How are you extracting it? And if I may, Mr. Chair, I think maybe Representative Dabney wants to jump in here, because that really came through his division first, and then there were modifications from Representative Hansen beyond that.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Chesky. I think Representative Beard sums it up well, especially the part about the testimony always complimenting Representative Hansen. People would say terrible things about the provision, but then talk about how great he was to work with on it. so he must be doing something right. I think as it has progressed to date, it has become more narrowed and targeted, as Chairman Chesky indicated, better differentiating between the burden placed on roads by some producers and the much different, much less burden placed on roads by the producers who rely primarily on rail. Mm-hmm. This is a recognition that there are costs to the public depending on how you mine and process. There's public health costs, there's infrastructure costs, and so on, and taking a good clean look at that at this time.
Grab some beer.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yeah, just a concluding comment. Well, thank you for that. I'll be paying attention to it going forward. But I do know that the ones in Le Sueur and Scott County in particular are on rail lines with very little trucking involved. So I hope there's very little impact on that, because those are our jobs. I know one of my kids just got hired in one of these in the mid-20s to start. So these are not, as we like to disparage, burger-flipping jobs. These are real jobs. And these are our jobs. You can actually get ahead and make your house payments and those kind of things. We can do those without coming back and doing some of the useful things we've done, like with the railroad rehabilitation help you gave us, and with the help for the manufacturer in Shakopee. That's one way to go at it. The other way to go at it is to let successful companies like this continue to do what they do well without taxing the daylights out of them, or throwing the fear of God into them and their bankers, which make them look twice at doing business in Minnesota. So I'm hopeful that this will actually allow them to continue to flourish, and thank you for the comments, Mr. Chair.
You, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lencheski. I know that you've got the driver's license transaction filing fee increase in here. Are there any other fee increases or new fees added?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson can tell me where you see that.
That was amended, wasn't it, in committee? Didn't we take out, or no, that's right, we took it out, didn't we? That's right.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We do have the transportation finance pieces in here that were the local option sales and wheelage, but I think maybe you're thinking of Representative Lesh's 911.
Oh, okay.
And he added that by amendment, and there had been initially, as that bill came in, a 4-cent increase dedicated to broadband, and that is not in here.
Okay.
It's simply the, you know, when you buy the card, the Go card, that you also are going to have to pay the 911 fee like the rest of the phone providers. And Representative Loon is very familiar with this, having carried it last year. But I think the part that might have been a little objectionable by that to some, Representative Lesh removed in for final passage in the omnibus tax bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, does this still have the car insurance fee in here, too?
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, yes. The surcharge on the homeowner policy and the surcharge on the car policy, that's the piece that is for fire and police across the state. Yes, that's still in there, and it's on the spreadsheet on the division report, and it's page 17. Page 17, in the special revenue fund. Let's see. Okay, so line 61, and that was the Atkins bill. And so you can see it kind of, you have to look at a series of lines to get it, to see how it flows. Fire surcharge, police surcharge, and then subtotal revenues.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson.
And Representative Lencheski, that's the only one then?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson, the only fees?
Yep.
No. Right, if you look under that same special revenue fund, above that is the fee on the prepaid wireless to bring those folks up, what we were just talking about, Representative Lash, to other folks have to pay it. There's the above that is the historic credit, the structural credit folks came in and they wanted to change the fee structure for purposes of picking up, you know, having that the folks who are trying to receive this tax credit from the taxpayers have to pay for the process they go through to see if they're approved.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Representative Lencheski, would it be possible just to get a spreadsheet of just the fees? It's kind of what I've asked of the other finance chairs, if we could get something like that. It doesn't have to be today, but certainly before this hits the floor, if I could get that. And I'm assuming, I don't believe you have any FTEs in here, but certainly if you can get the fee portion to me, that would be helpful.
Mr. Chair, they are fully contained. We just covered them all. That's the only fees in the bill. They're on that same page, again, lines 48 through 70. And the second part you just asked, well, we're repealing the cigarette health impact fee, you know, and actually calling it a tax. But so these are the fees. As to FTEs, there's been a debate over the years in the legislature on the House side as to who carries the FTEs for the Department of Revenue, and we have historically had them carried by State Gov Finance, and that's where they lie today. We're not doing a big tax compliance initiative. We've done a bunch of those in the last years bipartisanly, and that's usually where FTEs come into play. But because there is not one, I'm not aware of even anything happening in the Department of Revenue on that, but we would have to check with State Gov Finance where those provisions would be carried. So apologize, I don't know.
Hey, Representative Anderson, is that okay? Any further discussion? Seeing none, then we'll revert back to the amendments. For those of you that arrived a few minutes late, we already took care of the 824 amendment. The next one up is the 825 amendment by Representative Anzell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The 825 amendment is an amendment that Representative Nelson has been working on throughout the session. It pertains to agreements that would be entered into between developers in the, primarily the hotel and hospitality industry with workers where projects are publicly funded. The amendment speaks to and would include only four of Minnesota's 87 counties. In other words, it would only be applicable in four counties. The four counties in Minnesota that have cities of the first class, Hennepin, Minneapolis, Ramsey, St. Paul, Duluth, St. Louis County, and Rochester, which is Olmsted County. The amendment calls for a concept called labor peace agreements. These are common throughout the country, and they're common in Minnesota. Some projects in recent times that have had labor peace agreements have been the River Center, the Mall of America, Target Field, the Republican National Convention in 08, and the Xcel Energy Center. This amendment would cover primarily the hotel and hospitality industry, and the sum and substance of it is similar to project labor agreements, which are entered into in the construction industry. Workers and developers would have a signed agreement whereby the workers, the bargaining unit involved, would agree not to disrupt any of the business of the developer in any way with any kind of a labor dispute or labor issue, and the developer would agree that the bargaining unit and the workers could have conversation among each other about the decision that ultimately the workers would make on whether or not they wanted to become part of a bargaining unit as part of the labor movement. Very happy to answer questions. I'd move the amendment, Mr. Chair. And that's basically it.
The amendment 825 then has been moved. Any discussion on the amendment? Well, seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We now, I don't know if Representative Simon is back yet or not. He has what he described as a technical. Are you familiar with the amendment?
I am.
Okay, if Representative Lincheski would move the 826 amendment, and I'm told this is a technical amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is. It is a technical amendment for Representative Simon, and the staff is aware of it and agrees it's simply technical.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. That's all the amendments that I had. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then. Senator Loon.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, I was engaged in conversation with my neighbor, but, you know, we just added a significant amendment to an already highly controversial bill, this labor peace agreements, which we didn't spend any time talking about, but this legislation is, it's going to get heard in Commerce Committee. That's my understanding next week. I don't understand what the rush is to add this to it. I'm not even sure that this is germane, frankly, to the tax bill. I mean, the implications of this are astounding. You're talking about extending these to counties. So every city in Hennepin County is now subject to this, not on a city-by-city basis when they have projects going forward, but basically we're saying that the whole county is now subject to this and removing any essence of local control or that from city government, from what I can tell. I have a huge range of questions here with regards to hospitality workers and what that means. I'm sorry I didn't speak up while we were talking about the amendment, and you know I have severe concerns about the bill anyway, but I don't know if the chair has any comments on this at all, but I just wouldn't want to add this to my bill if I was the tax chair.
Senator Lincheski.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, I think the germaneness, even though we've already voted it on, if you want to look at how it's germane, it's really aligns one, arguably 1.8 through 1.13, but certainly 1.11 through 12 and 13. And so the way I read this is it only applies when you're receiving a public subsidy. So I think that's why it's before us, and the tax subsidy is in those lines. So unless Representative Anzels wants to tell me something different, I believe this is only for those projects that are receiving public subsidy.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Lincheski. So just when we talk about public subsidy, that's a pretty wide range. Is that a TIF, any kind of subsidy that could be structured through the tax code?
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's lines 1.11 through 1.13, and you can see providing tax increment financing, contributing revenue on geo bonds, providing a tax abatement, reduction, deferral, or credit. So all those tax abatements, tax reductions, tax deferrals, tax credits, tax increment financing, and revenue for the geo bond, I mean, I think those absolutely highlight why it's germane to the tax bill. And so that's the list that Representative Anzels has on his bill. I don't know if he wants to add to it. So.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Chair. And a couple questions here. First of all, thank you for including some of the veterans issues that we have in terms of on Section 32 and on Article 6. You included the Veterans Jobs Tax Credit, and you also included the Section 25, the Military Retirement Credit. Thank you for including those. There is one that, as you know as well as I do, I've been trying to work this into our legislation the last few years, and I think you actually worked on it a few years back in terms of getting rid of our taxing of our veterans' retirement pay. I think a few years ago, I think you came forward with some of that legislation before my time, and this is something that I know the veterans organizations are really looking at. That we want to try to get these 40-year-olds that are retiring from our services, military services, get them to come back to Minnesota. And we're one of, six states that still tax our veterans' retirement pay. You and I have talked about this, and I know just trying to find room within the tax bill to the expense of it. House File 60 would have phased it in over 5 years. Actually, the governor during Veterans Day on the Hill actually spoke on that. He said he was in favor of trying to work that into our budget if the legislature was able to do it. Any comments on that in terms of the veterans' retirement pay?
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Detmer, thank you. And we have had many discussions and heard your bills on all those ideas. And I appreciate that you recognize the military retirement credits in the bill and the veterans' jobs tax credit. And the veterans' jobs tax credit, I should say, came from Representative Wills and Representative Bernardi. It's a kind of a hybrid, a little bit different version, but they were the authors who carried those provisions forward. We have to make choices. I personally, have a difficult time targeting money toward our veterans to those who are in the situation you're describing, as opposed to, we heard a lot of testimony on homeless veterans. There's a lot of need for folks who have been injured and are serving, and we thought a better approach would be to get those folks, those employers who could hire them, a tax credit. That would be a bigger priority than trying to think about how to have folks who may live somewhere else move here, who are relatively well off. I will tell you, I in the past years had used to ask Representative Severson if he could support a credit just if you were an outstate resident, you didn't live in Minnesota, and we gave you the credit if you moved here. The majority of that proposal would give a credit to people who already are here. So, and then there's been a lot of other tax benefits provided for folks in that category already. So it is a choice issue. It's a very expensive proposal. The fact that it is 6 years to phase in tells you how expensive it is. This is we all know, or at least the folks on the tax committee know, who are sitting here, that tax credits are spending inside the tax bill, and people have to find the money. So many of these, they're good ideas. Some are great, some are not so good, and some are downright awful ideas in the whole realm of how to deal with all these kinds of proposals. And they come in veterans and higher ed and K-12 and the environment and, everything you can think of. And the truth is they're just hidden spending in the tax code that stays there and doesn't really get massaged over. So, I've tried to really limit them. They put that kind of autopilot spending built into the tax code, and then all the rest of us have to pay higher taxes because whoever we give a credit to pays lower taxes. So there's a true cost to them. But we've got them, no doubt, and we've got the Angel credit and the Historic credit, and now we've got a veterans jobs credit for hiring a veteran. So I appreciate your passion, and you've been very you've been an incredible advocate for this set of issues, but it's something I think that the committee is of two minds about. Certainly bipartisanly, there are people big fans of this issue, and bipartisanly, there are strong opponents. And I just if the governor and others are interested, I'm sure it'll get talked about in tax conference committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lencheski, and for hearing the bill, number one, in your tax committee. And I think as well I do, I'm not going to quit pursuing this venture and making sure that we take care of our veterans. And we want these veterans, these men and women that have served 20 years. I think we're doing a lot for those that are currently in our state, especially those that are in need. But we also want to draw the veterans who have put 20 years of service, have traveled all over the world serving our country, and we want them to come back to Minnesota and retire here, start businesses. They bring their educational benefits with them, with the GI benefits. They will buy homes. They will create jobs if they start businesses. They bring their health care with them, with the TRICARE. All these benefits, all this money, the federal money that comes into the state with our veterans, if they choose to come here. When they retire from after 20 years, they're given a list of states who are veterans-friendly for retired veterans. Minnesota is not on that list, by the way. And one more question, Mr. Chair. Representative Lencheski, on section, also on Article 6, Section 20, charitable contributions credit. Could you explain that? Is that changing the amount that we can, if we're going to be donating to charitable organizations, is that going to change the benefit that those charitable organizations are going to get, and also the people that are donating money?
Mr. Chair, I was hoping to find a particular sheet of paper that I was going to mention something about the charitable credit. so I could give you more detail, but I can't
and Mr. Chair,
find it,
and
but I will just tell.
And Mr. Chair, and then how much, you know, another question, how much is tax revenue is that going to bring into the state by this change in Section 20?
Mr. Chair, as far as how much it raises, and I'll get to the description of it in a second, is what it raises is on page 2 of the spreadsheet, lines 28, 29, and 30. And so you can see, you know, we're repealing the deduction, but we're bringing in a new credit, and so the net is $43 million. So you're looking at 28, 29, and 30 to get down to line 32, $43.7 million. And you know, this issue is difficult, like many things in taxes, to both explain and get people to get their heads around. But so I'll just try it without any detail and see if you can see where I'm going with this. So we treat, when people give a charitable contribution, we treat different taxpayers differently. If you're an itemizer, you get your charitable contribution deduction related to what bracket you're in. If you're a non-itemizer, you get half that. So we have an unfairness right there. So if you're a non-itemizer and you give a lot to charity, you don't get as big of a tax benefit as folks who are an itemizer. And I've repeatedly said that I didn't think this was fair. This proposal gets rid of that. Half of Minnesotans are non-itemizers. It's a lot of people, and they're getting a lot less of a tax advantage. So it takes care of that. And then what it also does is puts a floor on, you know, we're not going to give you on the first dollar of every charitable thing you do a tax benefit, because I mean, let's go to the definition of charity. You know, I hope people don't think of charity as an action that gives you a tax credit. Charity means you're doing a charitable activity, and most Minnesotans, indeed probably all Minnesotans, give a certain amount to charity for purely altruistic reasons, and they're not looking for a tax credit. So it's an inefficient system to have the tax code pay people to do what they're going to do anyhow. So what this does is set a floor and says you have to give up to this percentage of your income, and then you're going to get a bigger tax benefit beyond that. So it really incents you actually to give more. So I think there's confusion. People will see the number in the spreadsheet and think that's taking money from charities. No. Arguably, the charities will get more charitable contributions, but the state will stop subsidizing the activity that's already happening. So I'll give you an example. If you go to your next-door neighbor's mother's funeral, and you find out as you go through you go up to the funeral that, you know, you know memorials are preferred to the Lupus Foundation, I really highly doubt you're writing the check to the Lupus Foundation to get a tax credit. Minnesotans give charitable contributions for all kinds of things without needing a tax credit to get there. So this says, you know, when you're sticking out your old blankets and sleeping bags and towels and dishes that you're leaving to charity, at least in the suburbs is how we do it, on your driveway, and the disabled American veterans truck drives by and picks it up and leaves your receipt so you can put it on your taxes, that we believe Minnesotans do a lot of that on their own and give money to the hockey team and don't do it for a tax credit. And so there's an amount of activity happening in the charitable community that happens without a tax incentive to do so. So there's two things going on. Again, having non-itemizers get the same level of tax benefit that the itemizers get, and then setting a floor so that you, after you hit that mark, you get a higher tax credit for larger giving. Now, if you want me to walk through the actual details of how it works, I'm happy to, but I think it gets a little dry.
He doesn't.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Leshensky. One last question on... same section, Article 6, Section 24. Could you explain the marriage credit calculation income? It deals with the lesser earning spouse.
Can you tell me what
it'd
provision
be,
you're... I'm sorry,
section,
page?
Section 24, Article 6.
So page 29 of the summary... First, I'm going to try to find it on the spreadsheet. I think this is merely technical. If you would like Ms. Manzi to explain it to you, she is available. This is, she's nodding, it's a merely technical provision. We're doing federal conformity within the bill, which is a lot of items And one way to just to I know you're not getting into the whole thing, but one way to think about the federal conformity provisions that are interacting, and they're mostly for, you know, our residents and our businesses. They're the page 13 on the spreadsheet. So you can see quickly the detail that we're trying to simplify the tax code, really pass on the tax cuts that Congress has meant our citizens to receive. And so that's a technical part of eliminating the marriage penalty that we've had in Minnesota. And what the marriage penalty is, says you're paying a little more taxes because you happen to be married. So by removing the marriage penalty, by bringing in the new federal standard deduction amount that we have not been doing in Minnesota, all married filers receive a tax cut in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just going to apologize for interrupting Representative Lewin. We were having some discussion on that labor peace agreement, and I was trying to refresh my memory about a fire at a hotel that burned down in Eden Prairie several years ago, but I can't recall the details, so it wouldn't be fair for us to vet that here now, and especially since the amendment's already gone on, but perhaps I'll find the details and bring it up on the floor, so I'll pass. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, I think this is more for you, kind of piggybacking off a little bit of what Representative Loon highlighted. Just yesterday, we had Representative Detmer offer an amendment to a bill. It was advised by the chairs over on the other side that that's going to be heard in committee. You just need to wait it out, and that we shouldn't amend this here in this committee. And as you very well know, this committee does not receive any public testimony on things that are brought forward traditionally. I mean, very rarely do you actually get a chance to have public testimony. And yet we just put in place an amendment that has significant implications and policy that is going to be heard in a committee here soon. In this committee where no public testimony was taken whatsoever. This is, you know, what we have talked about at the legislature and trying to have more transparency. We just did the opposite of that, of having this amendment attached to this bill without public testimony, without having even been heard in committee at all. So, I, you know, we've seen this a couple of times. I hope that it does not continue, because the Ways and Means is a committee that has a tradition of not doing that at all. So,
You said a question of me, Representative Anderson. I think the difference between what you alluded to yesterday was that, as I mentioned, we had a communication from the chair, Chair Dill, that he wanted to hear that particular provision in his committee. And that's what I shared with the committee on that. That was a specific request. The amendment that was just added, there is a bill by Representative Nelson that's going through the process, and I think that was in rules. We had some discussion about the process of that one, and I think it was referred, if I recall, to the Commerce Committee. I don't know if Representative Atkins has a comment relative to where the bill is at this point relative to his committee, because it was just referred, I think, yesterday or the day before. Would you care to comment, Representative Atkins?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for raising the issue. And I appreciate, Mr. Chair, that when the amendment was offered, it was offered without any opposition from anyone on the committee. I did, while it was only a voice vote, I made a point not to vote. We look forward to having the bill before us and taking public testimony. It's scheduled for Tuesday, and I expect that we'll have a good, thorough discussion of the issue, and we'll see what happens at that time.
Mr. Chair?
Maybe I can, the author of the amendment, maybe can share some of the history as well, Representative Ansel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate the question, and I'm, you know, we're all interested in transparency and public participation, but I just remind everybody that this labor peace bill and the concept and the discussion was heard in the tax committee. I can't recall the date, but it was heard in relationship to our discussions about the Mall of America project and the Bloomington Central Station project. So there was an opportunity for public participation and testimony. I can't remember what the testimony was, but the opportunity was there.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anselks, I don't recall that at all. If you can direct me to what day, I think that would be helpful. But I think just to alleviate the concerns that we've expressed here, I'd like to move for reconsideration of the A25 amendment. And I'd like a roll call, please.
Okay, the motion is before us. Yeah. Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, and I think Representative Anselms is thinking of, and we're all busy, so we all don't get to every single meeting, but until he said that, I forgot it myself. Yes, we did have a discussion about labor peace, both from the developer side and from the interest of folks who are interested in it, and that was on the Bloomington Central Station Mall of America South Loop development area, and that was heard in a joint committee of property taxes and taxes, and those we had a number of those on Tuesdays. I don't know the date, but we did have that hearing, and that we had testifiers on both sides of the issue in that committee.
Mr. Chairman, so,
any further discussion on the motion to reconsider? Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and there's this is certainly very disturbing. There's certainly a difference between talking about something in some committee and actually having an amendment before us. I think it's very disturbing and troubling the way we're going here. I was often told in school when I would act up, my teacher would say, "Gregory, this is not the time or place." Well, Mr. Chairman, for this amendment,
Gregory, this is not the time or place.
Yes.
Voice from the past.
Yes, Mrs. Kahn. But members, what we have, I mean, I've said this before. This is the Ways and Means Committee. This is not the Soybean Subcommittee. Let's treat it like the Ways and Means Committee. You don't take a major controversial amendment and put it onto any bill. Now, this has been happening repeatedly. We can make all excuses we want to. Well, you talk to this chairman, you talk to that chairman. That's horse hooey. I'm not buying it. This is the Ways and Means Committee. We put on a major amendment with no testimony, and I hope that we will, for the dignity and honor of this committee, we will support the Anderson Amendment to pull that back. It's going to pass anyways. Members, just don't do it this way. It's going to go to Commerce. It's going to pass on a party line vote. It's going to go to the next committee. It's going to pass on a party line vote. It'll probably come back here, and it'll pass on a party line vote. Let the system work. Don't do this to the Ways and Means Committee. This is not the way we do it. Support the Anderson Amendment.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wasn't clear on the part on the tax, the two tax committees working together. That wasn't a discussion of tax chairs. It was a full committee hearing with public testimony on both sides of this issue. And I wanted to just add, Mr. Chair, that I've received a message that this bill for members, and, you know, I have not been tracking it. House File 1765 is the bill, and it was heard in the Labor Committee, the Rules Committee, and GovOps Committee. So in each of those places, I think there was opportunity for testimony, and as Rep. Chair Atkins has said, it'll be heard in Commerce next week.
Mr. Chairman.
Why are we doing this?
And I would like to point out, too, that this amendment was posted in advance. The motion was made by Representative Ansel to adopt the amendment. I asked for discussion. There was none, and we went to a vote. And so I think there was opportunity. We're revisiting an issue that we acted upon, but I want to make it very clear that people did have an opportunity before the amendment was adopted to engage in discussion. So we have Representative Atkins.
Just one final point, and that is I think in order to make a motion to reconsider, you have to have voted on the prevailing side. And I just wanted to make sure that Representative Anderson would.
Not in committee.
Folks, relax. It was going to be a joke.
Oh.
So I just wanted Representative Anderson to say that she had voted on the prevailing side. No, I just wanted to. I really, in all seriousness, I wanted to indicate I believe that in light of what was raised by Representative Anderson, I expect to support her motion. I would hope that we could have, in light of the fact that we've had it heard in, I believe, three committees and now a fourth policy committee, we'll hear it on Tuesday, that even though I support it, I'm hopeful that the discussion doesn't take all afternoon, but I do think it's important that on an issue like this that people get an opportunity to to be heard out a little bit more. So I support the motion, and in spite of my joke going over completely flat, I look forward to a little bit of a discussion. And then I would note that in spite of Representative Kahn shutting down my friend Representative Davids, both Representative Anderson and Davids serve on the Commerce Committee, and I look forward to hearing more from them on Tuesday as well.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to publicly thank Representative Atkins, Chair Atkins, for his comments, because I serve on the Commerce Committee. I don't serve on any of those others. I certainly want to make my city officials aware of the bill and provide them the opportunity to comment when the Commerce Committee meets and make their views known. This is not something that we've had the opportunity yet to speak about. And, you know, it came through rules, waiving the rules, because this bill didn't meet any of the deadlines that were set up for consideration of bills. So this is a special circumstance. So I just want to thank him for that. I think that it would be the fairest way to proceed, and one that allows the public to weigh in fully on this bill, which I think is all of our intent.
Okay, the clerk will take
Mr. roll. Speaker, or Mr. Chair.
The motion to reconsider now, so we all understand what the motion is before us.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to withdraw my roll call.
Roll call is withdrawn. Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all in favor of the motion to reconsider signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion defeated.
Division.
Division has been requested. Okay, all those in favor signify by raising your hand. Okay, opposed. Okay, the motion to reconsider prevails 17-12. That means the amendment is now before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then, all in favor of...
Mr. Chair?
Representative
Mr. Chair, I would just like to make an appeal to my friend Representative Anzels to consider withdrawing this. I think we've had a very... positive discussion here. Hearings are moving forward. There's ample opportunities for this to be considered. And in light of those discussions, I would ask the gentleman to kindly consider that.
Representative Anzel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I certainly didn't expect this kind of consternation over an amendment which its substance is very basic, very normal, very democratic, and Republican. And I just want everybody to understand that bargaining units, voluntary organizations of workers, have under federal law various rights, and they have the right to boycott a project, to picket a project, as their means of forcing management, in this case developers, to recognize federal law, which says that workers who wish to join a union should have a chance to freely discuss and communicate about their wishes to join a collective bargaining unit. What makes this amendment necessary is that when the public is a financial participant, when the people's tax dollars
are funding, are subsidizing a project that policymakers have deemed to be in the public's interest, then it just seems natural that we wouldn't want to create a situation between labor and management where a disruption, an economic disagreement involving either the project or the delivery of the services once the project is constructed to happen. The public has an interest in these matters. And that's what this amendment does in the four cities of the first class. So, with all due respect, Representative Loon, I'm going to stay the course here, and I think this is in the public interest. I believe it is a meritorious piece of language, and I believe it's necessary.
Yeah, Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anzlec. I'm not even going to get into the issue of the policy. I'm surprised that you're surprised about the concern here. We have been saying over and over again that this is not a policy committee, that there are processes and procedures. You have a bill that was introduced late. We understand that. It's going through the process. It has another committee hearing. We are again spending time in this committee on policy. Yesterday, over an hour was spent while nearly 100 members, staff, et cetera, waited for us to complete our business so the work could be done on the floor. You have the votes. You're going to put this on whatever, you know, bill or bring it to the floor and pass it. But at the very least, if we could try and stick to the process, have the right hearings, and avoid putting policy measures on bills and ways and means, I think everything would operate a little better around here.
Hey, Representative Kahn.
I just wanted to say that putting this amendment on could be a demonstration of efficiency in government. Mm.
Okay, thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative David.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and you know, this is a major policy issue here, and I want to thank Representative Atkins for his wisdom in this matter. This is going to pass at some point, but again, Representative Ansells, today is not the day. I just feel like I'm in a smoke-filled room in the dark of night with a bunch of lobbyists.
No, because
it's actually not all that bad. I've been there.
Remember, this is a small environment.
Jerry Zeck is laughing.
But my good friend from the range, I was with you yesterday wholeheartedly. You had a great amendment on the Ed Finance bill, but I would just ask you also, let's not stay the course here. You're going to get this. It's going to go. Let's just pull this back and have the hearing as Chair Atkins suggested in Commerce next week, and it'll pass out of there and it'll fly right through. Let's just do it the right way. And when I am comparing this to the soybean subcommittee, it may be worse than that if we continue this route. And I really have nothing against soybeans, but let's get back to what Ways and Means for. We don't put major policy issues on in Ways and Means. I don't care where it's been or how many people have talked about it or what day or when. This is not the way to do it. So my good friend, Representative Ansells, please reconsider your position and just pull it back so that it can have actual hearings. I'm on the Commerce Committee. We'll hear it there. We know it's going to pass out of there, but let's just do it the right way, and let's get some integrity back in the process.
Representative Loon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, I appreciate your fervor for this, Representative Ansells, and like I said, I have no opposition to having a thorough policy debate on this, but again, you know, it's coming before the Ways Means Committee. You're on the Tax Committee. This could have been part of the base bill. We could have had a discussion about it. Could have offered the amendment there and had discussion and taken public testimony. None of that's transpired. And again, if for no other reason than providing an open process for the public to testify, I really wish you'd pull this back. But if you insist on moving it, then I must ask for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Dittmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Ansel. Yeah, this is my first year on this Ways and Means Committee, so I learned a lot yesterday, and I had an important piece of legislation that I wanted to amend onto the Education Committee. It was a policy situation, and now I have to wait till next year for my piece of legislation with to get it through Representative Dill's committee. I think you just have to wait just a day or so to get it through another committee and then bring it forward. So I know I received notes from different people and say, hey, it's time to pull it off, pull it back, and then let the committee go forward. So I learned to really respect this committee. So I learned a lot yesterday. Thank you.
Representative Beard. Mr. Chair, Representative Ansel made a comment that he didn't understand what the problem was were voluntary associations in cities of the first class. But 2 points, Mr. Chairman and members. This is not about cities of the first class. This is about entire counties that surround cities of the first class. You could be out in Rockford or Eden Prairie, and you're compelled by the blunt force power of government, which is my second point. Nothing voluntary here. You're asking the power of government to compel people, whether they want to or not, to join in these labor protection schemes. I'm sorry, but that just is such a severe overreach that that doing it in this committee in this way is something I'm just going to have to ask for a no vote on. And I got to tell you, I've
not looked at anything.
I have no problem at all with people doing voluntary labor agreements and protecting a project and so on and so forth, but this goes way beyond that. Way beyond that, to where, well, enough said, Mr. Chair. I have to vote no, resoundingly no.
Okay, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And here again, we're arguing process over product. And this bill has been through, had a hearing in three committees. And we're holding up, we're going to hold up the tax bill an extra day or two. We're trying to get the people's business done here. And I take exception with labor protection. This is a labor peace agreement. And what this does, this means is that the projects do continue to move forward in a timely fashion without without any disruption, which costs less for the taxpayers, less for the county taxpayers, and less TUMS for the developers.
Okay, Representative Deb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd just like to bring the committee back off of the process sniping and back to what's the core of our responsibility here, which is what is in the public interest. And what's in the public interest is labor peace. It's not, the government shouldn't be siding with management. And this is heresy, perhaps, to my friend Representative Ansel, but government shouldn't be siding with labor. It should be finding that sweet spot in the middle where we see what the public interest is, which is labor peace. Particularly, as Representative Ansel's amendment does, when public dollars are involved. When public dollars are involved, what we want is commerce to go forward. We want business to be successful. We want workers to get decent wages, and be able to raise their families in a stable environment. That's the interest of the public. That's the interest of the state government. And that's what Representative Ansel's amendment pushes forward. And I appreciate that it's not limited to the cities of the first class, but those counties. Because that's better policy, because it avoids market distortions where a developer decides that they're going to build their hotel in St. Louis Park because they do or don't have a labor peace agreement requirement rather than Eden Prairie because it does or doesn't have one. And instead it says, we want to be in this area because that's where our business model tells us we can be most successful. Now let's figure out where's there a parcel that's available, that's accessible, that has whatever, whatever amenities, whatever aspects that they're looking for, rather than having them this sort of a policy drive them. So I would urge a yes vote on the Ansel's amendment because this is what the public interest is. This best expresses the public interest, and that should be bipartisanly the work of this committee and the work of this body. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative David.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to correct one thing my good friend from St. Paul, Representative Mahoney, said when he said this would be holding up the tax bill, I believe I heard. This doesn't hold up the tax bill. The tax bill is going to be voted out, and if this discussion goes on, maybe a few hours from now. But it's not going to be holding up the tax bill whatsoever. And I think Representative Dabney said it very clearly. He says this is better policy. This is better policy. This is not a policy committee, members. How do we know it's better policy? I want to go to Chair Atkins' committee and hear if it's better policy. This is not the way to do this, members. Representative Dabney himself said this is policy. And I agree with him. It is policy. So let's have that policy debate. You're going to win. I would just hope we would not do it this way. We're not holding up the tax bill whatsoever.
Representative Lund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, I must disagree with Representative Dabney. If this was just a disagreement on the policy issue, I wouldn't have raised the question afterwards. And again, I fully intended to speak on this. I wouldn't be going to this trouble, and I think a lot of members wouldn't either. This is a process question, members. We have a hearing scheduled next week on it. So why can't we let the policy committees address this issue, allow the public testimony? I'm not opposed to labor peace. I just want to know what my city thinks about this. It's now going to extend this to all the cities of Hennepin County and the other counties you mentioned, but I live in Hennepin, so that's of primary interest to me. I have no idea what my city thinks about this. I also don't have a full understanding of the scope of what could be impacted by this. Our city's looking at building a new swimming pool facility. If there's a snack bar in that, does that mean now that there's hospitality workers and labor agreements involved? I have no idea. These are some of the questions that need to be answered to fully be a responsible member in addressing what it means that, to things that may impact my city. All I'm asking for is that we allow the process to move forward. Testimony can be taken, and there's an avenue for that. This bill is moving through those committees.
I think we've got two more people, and then I think the arguments have been well heard. So Representative McNamara is next, and then I'll ask Representative Ansel if he'd like to make any concluding comments, and then we'll vote. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Ansel, because you know oftentimes I vote on the side of labor, and I certainly consider myself a friend of labor and a friend of business, which is a challenge here in the legislature. But, folks, this is clearly a procedural vote. This is a vote to let the process work. We should not be here. That's been discussed enough already. This is the Ways and Means Committee. I've been on it since my second term. This is not proper for what we're doing right now. My understanding is, and again, Representative Atkins, you deserve credit for letting the process work. I have not heard that it will affect the ability of this to be offered on the floor as an amendment to the tax bill. I cannot vote for this amendment, Representative Ansel. Now, I don't even know what the issue is. I'm sorry, I haven't got a clue what this issue is. I'm trying to understand it. But until it's vetted in the committee process and properly heard, I can't support it, and now I'm going to have a negative vote. And it may be something that I want to support, but we need to let it go through the process. You're going to win in the end. I think that's clear. I think that we should step back here and move forward, because I believe the amendment's going to fail now, because this is process that shouldn't be happening here. We have really important stuff to be doing on the floor, and we should move on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess if we're going to go forward with this, I'm looking at a report of the Cato Institute by Mr. Turek, and he states in his report that by one estimate, these agreements add 12% to 18% to the cost of public projects, and that they were previously banned from federally funded construction projects, and they could have increased construction costs by $1.6 to $2.6 billion in 1 year in 2009. So, you know, I guess if we're going to have the discussion with this is a finance component.
We're trying to draw this to a conclusion. I think everybody knows how they're going to vote. Representative Mulray.
Sure. I think that she's talking about a project labor agreement, not a labor peace agreement.
They are two different things.
Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for a spirited and good conversation. I do think it's appropriate to put a face on the issue. And what we're asking in this amendment is that you allow workers who serve you, your servers, workers who work in the laundry in the hotel that you're staying at, workers who provide you with your cheeseburger basket after work in the hotel where you stay, workers who are looking to have a job in a project that is constructed in a venue that exists in four counties, you, by voting yes on this amendment, are telling workers, you cannot disrupt or wreak havoc on the construction or the management of this facility. You're telling management, you're going to stay out of the way and allow these workers to have a conversation as to whether or not they want to organize. That is what a labor peace agreement is, and I want to underscore, only projects and venues that are funded by the taxpayer. This is in the interest of the public, the taxpaying public. Please vote yes.
Mr. Chairman. Hey, Representative Davids, I hope something new you'll be adding, because we're...
Yeah, there is something new I'm going to be adding, Mr. Chairman. And what I'm going to be adding is I would like to...
Representative Davids, I'm recognizing you, but
thank you.
You've spoke about three or four times. I'm trying to bring this to a vote. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very concerned, as Representative McNamara had said, I have a pretty good labor voting record around here, too, and I'd like to hear this and see if it's something I can support in Commerce Committee. So if we're just going to run this through with no testimony, just no transparency whatsoever, I would like to ask the audience if there's somebody from the chamber or somebody who'd like to testify on this with the concerns that they may have on this. But... You know, this is very disturbing. Mr. Chairman, I move that we lay this amendment on the table and ask for a roll call.
The motion is before us to lay the amendment on the table. All those in favor of laying it on the table?
Yes,
we're going to be a roll call, so okay. clerk would call the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Apler excused. Anderson S.
Yes.
Anzell?
No.
Atkins?
No.
Beard?
Aye.
Breinart?
No.
Clark?
No.
Davids?
Yes.
Dabney?
No.
Dean?
Yes.
Detmer?
Yes.
Gunther?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Yes.
Hausman? Hillstrom?
No.
Holberg?
Yes.
Hornstein?
No.
Huntley?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Lincheski?
No.
Loon?
Yes.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Mullery?
No.
Normus?
Yes.
Paymar? Excused. Pulowski?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Simon?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
Woodard?
Yes.
Okay, the motion fails. There were 12 ayes and 19 nays. Any further discussion? Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair, I withdraw my roll call on the bill. I think we just had it.
Okay, roll call has been withdrawn. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Division.
Division has been requested. Okay, all those in favor, raise your hand. Okay, all those opposed? Okay, the motion prevails 16 to 12. Representative Lincheski on the tax bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to quickly mention I know Representative Anderson's listening to Representative Holberg right now, so I did want to clarify something that Representative Anderson asked me. Representative Anderson, I misspoke when you asked me about the fees, and I want to just put it into the record. It's being delivered to you now. So on the FTEs, that historical, the three fees we talked about on the Historical Society fee, the 9/11 and the BTR, there is three FTEs for the Historical Society fee, a quarter of a FTE for the 911, and three FTEs for the PTR notification. So 6.25. So I just wanted to get that on the record, Mr. Chair, because I misspoke on that. Thank you. And I just had that information delivered to Representative Anderson from the fiscal analyst, nonpartisan staff.
Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Representative Lincheski renews her motion that House File 677, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We now have the second bill on the agenda, which is the transportation bill.
Let me check.
He didn't object to that.
I thought you needed. Okay, Representative Orenstein, you have a motion to get the bill before us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 1444. For passage and referral to the general register.
Okay, Representative Orenstein moves that House File 1444, the second engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed in the general register. We have three amendments. Three, I think. Or two, is it? Okay. Do you want to take the amendments first, or do you want to explain the bill first?
Mr. Chairman, let's take... Well, I know that I have an author's amendment, the A-16. I'd like to incorporate that into the bill.
Okay. Representative Hornstein moves the A-16 amendment.
Members, this is just a... Mr. Chairman and members, this is just a technical correction. Our fiscal staff alerted me last night to some very minor number changes on line 1.7 and line 1.13. We're in the bill. We're over $30,000 on the general fund, and we're under $20,000 on the trunk highway fund. So those have been corrected in the amendment to reflect the accurate numbers from our fiscal staff.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. You mentioned another amendment. I know there's...
You want to take that now?
Yes. I don't know if I have that with me.
The one I have is an A-15 amendment.
Oh, that's not mine, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's.
I only had one from you.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That. So,
so you want to explain
to the bill, Mr. Chairman and members, this is the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill. Basically, the highlights are that we have a continuing appropriation
for the Metropolitan Council that reflects for their operations. There's no cut to the Metropolitan Council. We have a slight increase for Greater Minnesota Transit. We also have most of the governor's recommendations for MnDOT, the Department of Public Safety. A couple of new initiatives are in this bill. One is called Corridors of Commerce, which is not funded in this bill except for a small general fund allocation to MnDOT to get the program started. But this is a new and important initiative to look at long-stalled highway corridors around the state that have not been included in the state's transportation improvement program in the past. It provides a competitive grant process and criteria for inclusion of those corridors. It's my hope that this will be adequately and robustly funded, if not this session, in the very near future. This is a very, very important initiative for roads and bridges in the state. So with that, Mr. Chairman, you know, I'd be happy to answer any questions about the bill.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Kahn, you have an amendment?
Yes. Mr. Chairman and members, I'd like to propose the A15 amendment. This is kind of a new step for me, having worked most of my career trying to get noise walls erected on highways. I am now, at the behest of my constituents, now that there's apparently a federal process that requires noise walls under certain circumstances. It's not clear that there's any federal money coming for this. It would have to come from the state or the county money for the noise wall. In this particular area, which is in the Dinkytown area, there's been a big objection from many of the constituents to do this because the freeway is depressed at this time. They don't see any great relief in noise. The thing that just drives them up the wall is, and to any of us who understands voting, it's the voting procedure for this, which is the federal guys analyze who the affected parties are. And then the affected parties are the only ones who are allowed to have a vote. This area has many 2.5-story walk-ups for students. Most of those have absentee owners. There's some formula about who gets to vote in the area. There are fraternities there too. There's some question about how many get to vote in each fraternity or sorority house. Nothing is to be considered except noise, not visual impact or light screening or anything like that. And the worst thing about this voting process is a non-answer, a no response of the ballot, is to be considered a yes vote. The natural response from anyone living there, which is most of the people who get ballots are totally unlikely to be affected by this. The natural response would be just go away and not return it. So I'd urge adoption of this amendment. And its financial relationship is clearly that it is a chunk of money. I have in my stuff, it's, you know, easily several million dollars, and that just gets returned to be used for other projects.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I will leave it to the committee's discretion on this. You know, I'm familiar with this issue. Senator Dibble and I sent a letter to the commissioner on behalf of the neighborhood. I know that there's some ongoing discussions with MnDOT. We had a similar issue that a similar kind of problem that Representative Mahoney had brought towards us. I think the goal is to sort of encourage more dialogue with MnDOT and the community. Impacted community. So, you know, I'll leave it up to the committee. We hadn't heard this, but I'm certainly familiar with this, and hopefully the process will be able to continue with this MnPass lane, but in a way that the community feels
heard and acknowledged. So,
and Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
I'll point out that this is very specific to this one area with it. Has been. I have a big file of exchange of letters and that kind of thing too, but I decided not.
Okay. Any further discussion on the con amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We now have the bill before us as amended. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then. Representative Orenstein renews his motion that House File 1444, second engrossment, as amended and recommended to pass and placed in the General Register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Any announcements we need to make? Nope. With that, meeting adjourned.